A Factual Data Creation Facility production.
Welcome to the OFNT Podcast, episode 257, which I'm calling Revenge of the Vortex. You know, I was just saying how the cold snap here was over, and what happens? Yeah, we get another cold snap, which also brought about 3 inches of snow. Now, up in New York, 3 inches is nothing. Down here, everything closes down. I actually went out and shoveled.
Oh, no. Why?
And on Friday morning, the temperature got down to 7 degrees Fahrenheit.
How dare you?
Well, the good news is warm weather is on its way this coming week.
Yay!
I think I'm all warmed up, so let's get started now.
Yeah!
3, 2, 1.
Tech news. Welp. The replacement for the iPhone SE arrived on Wednesday morning via a 12-minute introduction video on Apple's YouTube channel. At least that's how I found out about it. I say replacement for the iPhone SE because this new budget, and I kind of use that word lightly, iPhone is now known as the iPhone 16e. Yep, that rumor that was pretty much dismissed by most of the Apple-centric tech press turned out to be true. This new designation brings with it a lot of questions. My main question is, what kind of upgrade cycle will the new 16e have?
I don't know.
The SE series this phone replaces had a 3-year upgrade cycle. But now that it's the 16e, will it have a yearly upgrade cycle like the rest of the iPhone lineup? And will there be an iPhone 17e announced this time next year?
I don't know, mate.
For example, the 16e is based on the iPhone 14's chassis. Could we see a 17e next year based on the iPhone 15 chassis?
Huh?
If that's what the giant fruit company has planned, it might bring the dynamic island for its display instead of the notch of the 16e. Of all the things that Apple stripped out of the 17e in order to make it more affordable, the only feature that matters to an old fart like myself is the dynamic island. I'd gladly save myself some cash by going for a 17e instead of the main models of iPhones. Speaking of which, what you're not getting with the iPhone 16e is MagSafe charging, which you can get around by buying a MagSafe equipped case, albeit without fast charging capability. But honestly, I just charge my iPhone overnight because I don't use the phone as much as younger folk tend to do. Also, this new 16e has the best battery life amongst all the iPhones. So, fast charging, while nice to have, will be less of a necessity for some, if not the majority of users. You also don't get the Wi-Fi 7 protocol with this new model. Just Wi-Fi 6, but let's face it, most consumers are still using Wi-Fi 6 routers anyway. The biggest, or at least the most obvious thing you'd be giving up, is a wide-angle lens. Instead, you'll be restricted to one excellent 40-megapixel rear shooter. But with the magic of computational photography, you wouldn't miss those other lenses. And to be honest, I rarely use the wide-angle lens my iPhone 15 Pro Max came equipped with. Besides the main camera, I use the zoom lens the most, but not that much that I couldn't live without it. Besides these features, you don't get wide millimeter wave spectrum broadcasting, which helps with precise locations, mostly used with the Find My application. And you also don't get threading, mainly used for smart home stuff. So, who is this iPhone aimed at? It's aimed at people like myself, whose life doesn't revolve around their smartphone and just want a basic iPhone that does those basic things good. With that in mind, let's go over what the iPhone 16e brings to that kind of user.
Okay.
In my opinion, the most important thing this phone brings is 26 hours of battery life.
Wow.
Versus the 22 hours of the rest of the iPhone 16 lineup brings. That enhanced battery life is credited to the new Apple-designed 5G modem, called the C1 chip. I guess buying Intel's modem design section all those years ago is finally paying off for Apple.
Yes.
This iPhone also brings a very serviceable camera, which is good enough for those snaps of the grandchildren. And while the 16e doesn't have the just-added camera control button, it does have the action button, which can toggle various things such as the flashlight, for example, as well as other functions that can be programmed by the user. The phone also supports Apple's satellite features like emergency SOS messages, roadside assistance, and Find My outside of cellular coverage. To be able to run Apple Intelligence, the iPhone 16e is equipped with 8 gigs of RAM, and storage starts at 128 gigabytes and tops out at 512 gigabytes. To sum up, what you're getting is a solid phone equipped with most of the features of the high-end models without having to spend as much of your hard-earned cash. Oh, about that. The iPhone 16e starts at $599.
Whoa!
Yeah, that's just a little bit too stiff for my tastes. If Apple could have brought this model's price point in between $500 to $550, I would have felt better about it. I mean, how much can the MagSafe magnet cost Apple? A buck at the most? What consumers will be paying for the 16e, it wouldn't harm the company's bottom line that much. But then again, Apple doesn't play like that.
No.
The iPhone 16e also brings with it the end of an era. The SE line is finished, the color red option is gone, as well as iPhones with Touch ID and LCD displays. Not to mention a true small form factor phone. For the last 9 or so years, the entry price for access to the iOS ecosystem was below $500. Now it's $600. At this price point, I'm unsure if the iPhone 16e will be the market disruptor I predicted it would be. But I'm sure Apple will wind up selling a ton of them anyway. According to an article from MacRumors.com, Apple reportedly passed over DeepSeek as the company's Apple Intelligence partner for the Chinese market. The government in China doesn't want foreign tech companies equipping the products they sell in country with AI developed by non-local entities. Can't say that I blame them. Though what I've seen from products like Google's Gemini, most of the values programmed into their version would be aligned with the CCP's, if you get my drift.
Yes.
So the giant fruit company is forced to partner with a local company's version of AI in order to sell their wares in that market. After evaluating AI models from DeepSeek, Alibaba, Tencent, and ByteDance, Apple is reportedly moving forward on a partnership with Alibaba. Being that DeepSeek was developed using Apple A and M series chips, well, you'd figure that this AI model would be a perfect fit for Apple hardware. Perhaps Apple decided on going with a more established partner, who would have a better and longer relationship with government authorities. This would make jumping those local hurdles that much easier. DeepSeek would have been cheaper for Apple to partner with, but DeepSeek is a fairly recent startup and, from what I understand, of dubious backing. The headline from 9to5Mac reads, Apple is removing iCloud end-to-end encryption features from the UK after government compelled it to add backdoors, unquote. This kind of thing's becoming common these days. Thank goodness the last election went the way it did, or I fear we here in the United States would be facing the same thing. Governments throughout the world desperately want access to all your data, and they use terrorism as an excuse. Companies, no matter where they are headquartered, cannot resist demands like this if they want to sell their wares in the host country. New iCloud accounts have no option to sign up for the advanced data protection feature, and current iCloud accounts have until the end of February to disable it on their devices, or iCloud won't work. Some will say, "So what? I've got nothing to hide. I'm not breaking any laws." And to them I say, you may not be breaking any laws now, but future laws will be on the table as the powers that be will have full access to your data. What a sad state of affairs for the UK and the rest of the world. In some more good news, MacRumors.com has an article which reports that Apple Maps might start showing ads in the future. According to Bloomberg's Mark Gurman, Apple is, quote, exploring, unquote, the idea of displaying search ads within the Map app.
Oh, no.
Gurman had reported back in 2022 that software engineering was already underway to display ads in Apple Maps, but recently the giant fruit company is giving it more thought. If you recall, Steve Jobs introduced an Apple ad system back in what you may refer to as being the day. But because of Google's monopoly of ads, Apple decided not to enter that market. I guess now that the formerly Don't Be Evil company has been officially judged as an ad and other things monopoly, Apple sees an opening. Anyway, old Tim has to make up the billions of dollars his company will most likely lose because when Google's judgment gets handed down, well, they won't be allowed to pay any company to make Google search engine the standard engine on their devices. I guess all those 80s and 90s sci-fi movies where ads are everywhere were just accurately predicting the future, unfortunately. Speaking of ads, according to AndroidAuthority.com, YouTube Premium Lite is finally coming to the United States.
Yay!
Back in 2023, YouTube Premium Lite was an option in this country, but Google ended it. Lucky consumers located in Austria, Germany, and Thailand were offered a test version of Premium Lite. Google stated last week that this tier will be expanded to the United States, and if all goes well, it will expand to other countries. Well, if you pay less, of course, you'll be getting less. If you do opt for this Lite plan, you'll lose ad-free YouTube music, and if you watch any music video on YouTube, well, you'll be seeing ads. A price for the plan wasn't mentioned in the article, but with the regular premium tier being $13.99 per month, I'm guessing the premium Lite tier will cost you $9.99 per month. I'm a YouTube premium subscriber, and I would most likely go for the Lite version because I never use YouTube Music, which is a mess in its current form. I think this expansion of YouTube Premium is in response to the use of ad blockers while viewing YouTube lately. No matter what YouTube does to counter these ad blockers, the devs of them stay a step ahead. It's that time of year where Amazon holds its annual event. In fact, this year's event is scheduled for the 26th of this month, which is this coming Wednesday. A new AI-infused Alexa is expected to be announced during the event. That's according to an article on AndroidAuthority.com. This next-generation digital assistant will not be ready for the event, and that's according to internal messages seen by the Washington Post, and that the public release of this new Alexa has been pushed back until March 31st. Amazon's trailblazing digital assistant is my digital assistant of choice, having used it since receiving a first-generation Echo before the general release to the public. The only digital assistant that gave Amazon's version a run for the money at a time, at least in my opinion, was Microsoft's Cortana, which slowly died after the cancellation of Windows Phone. Thanks, Google.
Yes.
I was hoping I could test the upcoming AI-infused Siri while using the public beta of iOS 18.4. But alas, the developer's beta is already out, minus the new version of Siri. The problem with its new Alexa is that it's having trouble answering the test questions, whatever they are. According to a newsletter from AndroidPolice.com, the most anticipated foldable phone of 2025, and that's their words, the OnePlus Open 2, is not to be released this year, citing a blog post from OnePlus itself. The first-gen OnePlus Open was introduced in 2023, and because the tech world moves at a rate approaching the speed of light...
What?
Yeah, I just felt like throwing in an Einstein theory quote. That phone can be considered obsolete. Well, at least on its way to being considered obsolete. The author mentions that the original OnePlus Open's pre-order sold out and the phone was Android Police's foldable of the year. According to the brand's product manager, the cancellation or delay of version 2 of the Open doesn't signal OnePlus's withdrawal from the category. What I think is going on here is that Oppo, who is the manufacturer and owner of the OnePlus brand, both during and post Carl Pei's involvement, is probably shifting resources to its main brand, which of course is Oppo. Outside of the United States, mostly in Asia, Oppo, not OnePlus, is a more recognizable brand. Heck, Oppo probably keeps the OnePlus brand around only because of its name recognition within the United States and Europe. It's more of a side project for them. Now, as far as the foldable phone market as a whole, at least in this country, it's still a niche market. You know, I have never seen a foldable phone in the wild while living in New York or here in Tennessee, and that includes New York City. What I did see up in New York was mostly iPhones with a sprinkling of Android phones, usually from Samsung. Before the iPhone's dominance, BlackBerry was the dominant phone.
What?
If you can believe that. Here in Tennessee, I see a lot of iPhones, but also a lot of Android phones from different manufacturers. The younger generations have iPhones, while the older ones tend to have Android. I've only seen one modern Pixel phone in the wild in my life. If Apple decides to get into the foldable phone market, then you'll start seeing this form factor more in public from both Apple and Android manufacturers. As for me, I'm not sold on foldable phones yet. And my lovely wife would be all over a foldable iPhone. Tech I'm using. Well, my wife is currently traveling in foreign lands visiting relatives. Unfortunately, the most reliable way to stay in touch is via Facebook Messenger.
Oh, no.
I know it's sad, but it's true. Over the years, we've tried other apps, but with certain places having no Wi-Fi and weak cellular service, we've found Messenger to be the most stable and reliable means of communication. Not wanting to miss any contact with her, I've downloaded Messenger onto my Macs, iPad, and yes, even my iPhone.
No!
We video call each other, so every device has to have a camera, obviously. All my Apple devices have cameras except my Mac Mini. But hey, no problem. A few Christmases ago, my son gifted me one of those highfalutin Logitech webcams. He paid a pretty price for the darn thing, because pandemic pricing was still in effect back then. Before that, I was using a Chinese knockoff my youngest daughter had given me, which was serviceable, but the Logitech is a lot better than that thing was. So, I retrieved the Logitech webcam from my drawer, mounted it onto my monitor, and attempted to plug the old-style USB-A cable into my Mac Mini. It was at that very moment I realized that I didn't have a USB-A slot available. All I had was one USB-C slot available. Sure, I could have ordered a USB-A to USB-C adapter from Amazon, but why let an excuse like this prevent me from buying some better and more expensive tech? What I justified needing here was a USB hub. And not just any USB hub. What I needed was one custom made for the now old M2 Mac Mini. You know the kind, the ones that the Mini sits atop. Looking around on Amazon, I found that it's slim pickings on these types of hubs for the old, larger Mac Minis. For a brief moment, I considered upgrading to a new M4 chip Mac Mini itself, but tech sanity soon returned and that thought quickly evaporated. The choices I was presented with were to buy a hub with space for external hard drives or one without that capability. Basically, I had two choices. And they were a Satechi hub with an SSD enclosure for $95 or a Satechi hub with no SSD enclosure for $75, which also had a digital coupon which knocked the price down to less than $70. There were some hubs from brand names I've never heard of, but I discounted those. I've used Satechi-made gear in the past and find them to be of high quality. So I went for the cheaper non-SSD-compatible model. If I had decided on the more expensive model, well, I would have been bothered by that empty hard drive bay and be compelled to fill it, which would have cost me more money and no doubt problems in the future mounting that drive. Well, the hub arrived today, but I haven't installed it yet. I'll let you know how that goes next week. I don't know why, but I dusted off my old Apple Magic keyboard that I had replaced with the Logitech mechanical keyboard. Oh wait, I do remember why I made this switch. While I love the feel of a mechanical keyboard, lately these old fart hands have been getting fatigued while typing. You know, I do have some arthritis going on in them, especially my left hand, and these cold snaps certainly don't help. Since doing the Swap Friday, I can say that I can type longer and faster on the Magic Keyboard than the Logitech mechanical keyboard. That's because I'm not a touch typist, though I'm slowly turning into one when I use the mechanical board. When using the Magic Keyboard, I have to look at the keys while typing. With the Logitech, I sometimes look at the keys, but mostly touch type. Don't ask me to explain why this is, I don't know. Besides increasing the speed and amount of time I can type, the only advantage the Magic Keyboard has is the Apple Touch ID module. And now this is only a slight advantage because the Apple Watch can perform those functions also. The Logitech has much better battery life, backlit keys, and the ability to switch between three different devices with one keystroke. When faced with a long bout of typing, I'll be using the Apple Magic Keyboard. For short amounts of typing, I'll be doing it on the Logitech. If you don't have old arthritic hands and no need for Touch ID, well, I'd recommend pairing one of the multitude of third-party keyboards available, both mechanical or not, to your Mac. Now, this isn't really about tech. Well, at least tech based on electricity anyway. For many years now, I've always woken up with a sore neck. Some refer to this as a stiff neck. I've tried everything from rearranging my pillow to not sleeping using a pillow at all. But nothing has worked to alleviate this condition. When we moved to this new place, I decided to buy the most expensive pillows I could find around here. Those turned out to be from a mattress company named Casper. We spent about $200 on four pillows. These pillows are crafted from memory foam, as are the company's highly regarded mattresses. Unfortunately, these expensive pillows didn't have any effect on my sore neck problem. One day, my lovely wife and I were shopping at a local discount store. You know the type. They buy up excess stock from other stores or companies that have too much inventory or are going out of business. And they buy it for pennies on the dollar. And then they sell these items at their own store. Anyway, I came upon a bin that had those My Pillows that were advertised heavily starting around 2015. The owner of the company was the star of these commercials, and being he's from Minnesota, he carries that distinctive Midwest accent. Oh, by the way, the man has an interesting life story. He previously owned a bar and became what's called a crackhead and lost everything to his addiction. Long story short, he found religion and turned his life around. His latest problem, though, was he became an election denier back in 2020 and was canceled. His pillows were pulled from store shelves, his advertisements were pulled from just about all forms of media, and the previous administration did what they always did during the last 4 years. They had the Federal Bureau of Investigation open up a case against him. At one point, he was pulled over by them while he was in a fast food drive-thru line and had his phone seized. Well, he ran his business from his phone, so this was a devastating blow to him. In other words, they tried to ruin the man. Well, he and his business survived, but My Pillows sales are probably not what they were pre-2020. I always felt that the My Pillow brand was kind of overpriced, so I never considered purchasing them before. But at the discounted price they were being offered at, I decided to give them a shot, and boy, I'm glad I did. Upon using these pillows, my usual morning stiff and sore neck has been cured. I'm talking the very next morning after using the My Pillow. Even my wife, who usually doesn't agree with most of my opinions, if any at all.
No, dear, that's wrong.
No, it's not. Had to admit that these pillows were great. Curious about the pillow's makeup, she opened one up to see what material was being used. Well, the My Pillows are stuffed with nothing more but some sort of synthetic material. Well, I'm sure there's a patent on this material, or other manufacturers would be using it. We like these pillows so much that we purchased a couple of the version 2 of My Pillows pillows. The only difference being that they have some added material for keeping the pillow cool during hot weather. If you have the neck problems I just described and the My Pillow brand is available in your area, give them a try. And oh, I wasn't paid or compensated by My Pillow in any way. I say that because this might come off as a native ad.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Entertainment news. After many years, Major League Baseball will not be broadcast on the ESPN network, as the MLB has ended its 35-year partnership with the sports network. This story is from BigLead.com. ESPN lowballed the MLB, wanting to pay less for the rights to carry MLB games on its network. The MLB's commissioner, Mr. Rob Manfred, commented that it's time for the MLB to find greener pastures, while also adding that ESPN has scaled back their baseball coverage that's not consistent with the sport's appeal. He also pointed out the falling subscription numbers of ESPN. My experience watching baseball on ESPN supports Mr. Manfred's statement. Games are few and far between on the network, and the games they do carry seem to have lower production values than other sports have. I would watch Yankee games on ESPN, and the announcers were definitely the B team. There was one, since a fired announcer, whose qualifications were that she played college softball. Softball is not comparable to hardball. I've played both and can tell you, it's two different games. Well, this announcer wouldn't stop yakking during the game, and while watching the Yankees versus their arch rivals, the Boston Red Sox, she certainly had a Boston bent to her coverage. That's because she's an employee of the Red Sox. Another problem with ESPN is they've gotten political. In other words, woke. Hence the network's dwindling subscribers. People watch sports to free themselves from being bombarded with politics. Yet most of ESPN's announcers just had to add it to their coverage of sports. I just hope that the MLB finds a new network that's widely available, because games carried on networks like ESPN are considered national broadcasts and are blacked out on the MLB app. 9to5Google.com is reporting that Spotify plans a, quote, music pro tier for an extra $6 per month, which includes perks and better audio, remixing tools, access to concert tickets, and higher quality audio will be the features of this new plan. No thank you. I already have higher quality audio with Apple Music along with spatial audio. I don't even know what remixing tools are. Maybe you can remix your favorite songs on Spotify? I don't know. I'm of the age where I don't really want to attend concerts any longer. It would take a special act or artist for me to drag my old fart butt out to some venue in order to hear live music these days. Spotify Premium already costs $11.99 per month, and if you add in the extra $5.99 per month for the Music Pro tier, well, you're looking at $17.99. That's around $20 per month if you include the taxes. That's getting to be just too much. You know, all of these subscription services pricings are getting out of control. Is it any wonder why piracy of content is increasing these days? Podcast news. In the last episode, I touched on the upcoming Podcast Academy's Ambie Award show, which will be streamed on Twitch March 31st. I commented on the previous hosts of the show and how bad, mediocre, or tolerable they were. Well, it was announced this week that the host of this year's Ambie Awards show will be Tig Notaro. Well, I've actually heard of Ms. Notaro and have seen her in various movies and television shows. Well, this has to be the biggest named host the Ambies have ever had. I'm sure she'll do a good job at hosting. Too bad most of the podcasts nominated for these awards are corporate-backed. I would have liked to have seen more truly independent podcasts represented, like the No Agenda podcast, for example. Well, I guess that independent podcasts who started the whole industry have been successfully squeezed out, as many had predicted would happen, with video podcasts knocking at the door, along with their host propriety formats and distribution. I wonder how long Podcasting Incorporated will stay with audio-only podcasts before fully pivoting. Well, time will tell. If you happen to follow politics of the United States,
yes?
No.
Then you'll know the mainstream media has labeled this last presidential election as the podcast election. Well, it really wasn't that. But the winning candidate's appearance on some, especially the Joe Rogan Experience, surely didn't hurt. While looking to explain their preferred candidate's loss, the corporate media have lamented if only the left, i.e. the Democratic Political Party, had their own version of the Joe Rogan podcast. They reasoned that if they did, then perhaps Harris would have won. As predicted by the hosts of the No Agenda podcast, who predicted that the MSM and the DNC would search for a podcast to elevate. Well, this past week, it looks like they have found their counter Rogan. On various television news programs, and I'm being very generous labeling them as news programs, we had the newsreaders reporting with unbridled glee that the mighty Joe Rogan has been dethroned as the number one podcast by the Midas Touch podcast.
Huh?
Yeah, I've never heard of it either.
No.
The Midas Touch podcast was represented by the media as just three guys who have no backing and managed to get 26 million downloads compared to Rogan's 20 million. A deep dive conducted by the Podfather, Mr. Adam Curry, discovered that the three bros of the Midas Touch, as one of the news outlets described them, are actually well-heeled Brooklyn, New York types. The main host is a lawyer that headed, or maybe still heads, an anti-Trump organization. So, no surprise there. As far as the 26 million downloads, Mr. Curry found that the Midas Touch, which really is only a YouTube channel, the show has no RSS feed that I can find, releases up to 20 different short episodes per day.
Yeah, boy.
While Rogan releases but one per day. I guess that's why the show needs three hosts. Usually there's only one host for each episode. Now this would account for the large number of downloads. Well, not really downloads. Views would be a more apt term here. Because of this publicity, or should I say native ads, I'm sure the Midas Touch will get a bump from curious people like myself, wondering what all the hubbub is about. I watched a couple of episodes of the show and found that basically reports negative news about everything Trump does. Even if I was ideologically aligned with these hosts, I'd be turned off by the constant negativity emanating from this show. At the most, this is a well-supported, by the usual characters, YouTube channel, created by entities with an interest in seeing Trump fail, all in an effort to counter the successful channels which are either pro-Trump or neutral. At the least, the Midas Touch is the creation of a person or people who have Trump derangement syndrome who can't accept that their candidate lost in an election. Now that this show is on the radar, I'm sure they'll be getting looked into. I wouldn't be surprised if it's found that the Midas Touch was stood up and funded by the same groups that did the same during the elections, which saw influencers and YouTubers alike make a nice chunk of change by towing a certain agenda's line. Stay tuned. The music is playing as this episode of the OFNT podcast is rapidly coming to its end. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I enjoyed making it for you. If you like what you heard, you can always make a donation using the link in the show notes. Any and all donations will be greatly appreciated. And you can always reach me at ofntpodcast@gmail.com if you're so inclined. I'd enjoy hearing from you. Remember, don't listen to what they say, watch what they do. Just like the return of this polar vortex thing, why don't you chill out and leave by getting off my lawn? Stay skeptical.